all had things in our life, maybe a hobby, maybe something, but we never learned it all at once. True? We all learned incrementally. And I'm going to probably continue to learn about cars even after I don't have cars anymore, I would think. And you know what I mean by that. There's always learning. I have other things in my life that I've done, interests, tools, hobbies, games, whatever. And you just learn. You learn as you go. And if you've ever collected anything, you know, you learn as you go. You never know everything at the start of the collection. You learn it as you go through the collection. And the reason why I'm saying this today is I want to have a just kind of that setting that we learn as we go in our back of our mind for the message itself. All right, so we'll dive in with the verse here. Yeshua himself is saying this. He said, I do not pray that, and he himself is praying God here, and he said, I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil one. So in other words, for his followers, we're not praying, he's saying, God, I'm not praying that you take them out, leave them here, just protect them. That's kind of a deep prayer for all of us who are left behind. I think I don't know what's happening back there. For all of us who are left behind, I think we would say, you know what, Yeshua, you may have made a mistake there. I'd love to just go with you. True? I think of John. I mentioned earlier, just this morning, I found out he passed away, our own John Nichols. He's living. I got to think, and this is just my own brain because we don't have the details of what heaven is like, but I think I might be the farthest thing from his mind right now. What do you think about that? I think he's thinking about many, many better things. He knows things that I can't even imagine. And you can't put us all together. We can't imagine what he is doing. I would have loved to have said, you know, Yeshua, I think you didn't say that prayer quite right. Why don't you pray that we would also go? But he didn't. He said that we would stay, but protect us. We read in, I think I'm going here. Oh, I was going right. Romans 12, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. So here we are. Present our bodies like a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your, which is your reasonable service. Verse 2, and do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing. Not only are we here, we have the challenge of being conformed to the world. What do you think about that? That's you talk about an issue for us, so we're here. But we have this big challenge. Every day, the world would pressure us to not remember the ways of the Lord. Every day, the world would put its screws to us and get us to focus on things in life, things that we think are so important. But in the scope of it all, what's really more important? God. So we know that. We give our life to the Lord. This is a reset for many of us here. We are his followers. We are his Talmudim, his disciples. And if he would do X, Y, Z, we would copy him. Do X, Y, Z. If it's good enough for Yeshua, it's good enough for me. How do you feel about that? True? So here we are. I want to read this verse. Yeshua came and talked to them before he ascends into heaven after the resurrection. He said, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. But this is a well-known passage. Many of you in the room have heard this passage many times. But not everybody has, so I'll read it. Verse 19, therefore, go and make people from all nations into Talmudim. In other words, he's talking to his disciples, his Talmudim, and he's saying, hey, Talmudim, go make Talmudim. You're one, now go make more. What do you think about that? We've got to figure out, you know, this whole challenge in life of just living. You know, we're here. And we have the challenge of surviving in the world. And it is survival in the world. It's getting to the point where you can't even disagree with somebody politically without fear of being shot. Well, that was slick there, wasn't it? We're living in a crazy day. But we need to, while we're here, continue to move forward and continue to progress and continue to be Talmudim, disciples, making more Talmudim. I think what's so interesting to me is how people get worked up about doing it. And this isn't everybody. I think over the years in my life, I've seen people so razzled about how to make Talmudim. They know how to be a Talmid. They know how to follow him. But they don't know how to make more. And it, you know, the best picture of being a follower, I think, is the Hasidic Jewish community. They give the best picture of being a follower of well, not Messiah, but of a rabbi. They wear, and I've shared this here, and I know my dad has shared this here, they wear black coats and white shirts and a hat that all match their rabbi. If the rabbi wears a fur hat, they wear a fur hat. If the rabbi wears a fedora, it's a fedora. If it's a fedora that's flat on their head, then they keep it flat on their head. If it's a fedora tilted to the left, they tilt it to the left. Whatever their rabbi looks like, they look like. Who is our rabbi? This one guy, maybe you've heard of him, named Yeshua. He's our rabbi. So if he was here and he wore whatever, I would be like, what do you think? Maybe we should wear like that too. It's this wonderful picture. And so we understand how to do that. We understand how to mimic him. Okay, we get that. We'll mimic you. But how do we make more? And that's the part over years in my life, people can sometimes think themselves into circles. So we're just going to spend a few minutes this morning, and I want to give you some less complex ways to make Talmidim. You might be doing these already. Then go, hey, praise God. I already know all that stuff. I got a refresher. But I have a feeling there's something in this list for everybody. It's not a heavy-duty list, but this is big. And stay with me to the end, because there's a point for this list. Number one, Acts 26. Now, I just took some specific verses out here because I'm trying to get to a particular point. But do go back and read the whole chapter. You get a much better view of the whole chapter. Acts 26, verse 12, while thus occupied, as I journeyed to Damascus with authority and commission from chief priests at midday, here's what's going on. Paul is telling his story. And he's before, and you see the name here, King Agrippa in Jerusalem, and he's been arrested. And the king said, what's your story? Why are you doing these things? You used to be this way. And then you turned radically and basically about following Yeshua. Why are you so different? So he, okay, I'll tell you the story. And he shares the story with King Agrippa of his, of him finding Yeshua. And he's on this, you know, the people will say the Damascus Road, you know, is kind of the illustration of what happened to him. He's there, he's on a donkey, and he gets a vision from heaven, he sees Messiah in this vision. It blinds him. And this tremendous epic journey. So somebody who was such a good Jew, he was killing believers. He turned into such a good Jew, he followed the Messiah. One was a little bit facetious. One was very true to the point of death. Paul took it all the way to death, his commitment to Messiah. But the amazing thing is, in this last verse, then King Agrippa said to Paul, you almost persuade me to become a Christian. Now, I left that word in there. I think probably believer would be a little bit more accurate for my flavor. But you get the point of what's happening here. Paul, all he does is share his testimony. All he does is share what God's done in his own life. And this is a massive lesson for us. I want to encourage you, their first thing, this is not heavy lifting. If you don't know how to make disciples, if you don't know how to share about Messiah, start with sharing about you. And what the Messiah has done for you. Because that is enough. If you grew up like my dad, you'll have one story. Because that will be the, you know, some of you grew up like my dad. He didn't know the Lord when he was young in that way. He was a good Jewish man, but he didn't come to faith until he was, I don't know, I was a kid, so I thought he was about 400 years old. But he was in his mid-20s or so. That was a joke there. But he was in his mid-20s or so. Some of you came to faith later. Some of you are like me, and you did it very young. Now, I talk about this. I came to faith before my dad, and after my mom, but before my dad. And I consider my dad one of my pupils. And I think he's done a good job hanging in there through the tough times. And stay with it, Dad. You're on the right road. Good job. All of us, the three of us, have different perspectives. My mom has her story. I have my story. My dad has his story. Three different lenses of how we view our walk with God. And at any point, I can talk to somebody about the Lord and say, I just got to tell you what the Lord did in my life. And the things in my life, because I was a kid, I avoided. And my life has been a life of a much more stable platform, not just like being a typical guy, you know, the job, fortunate to have a job, but blessed with a platform that is eternal. It is a platform that transcends into the spiritual world also. And I'm very blessed because of that. And I can speak to that. If you want to know how to create Talmudim, just start telling people your own story, what God's done in your life. You're glorifying God, but you're using you as the illustration. It works. It works. It's amazing. Paul did it when he was under arrest. Isn't that something? I just want to encourage you, don't gloss over your own story. It might be boring to you because you've known it for so long. But it is not boring to people who don't know you. It is not boring to people who don't. And one big thing about this, you have to open your mouth. That's your part. But you don't have to think hard about the story of what God's done in your life, the things that you've seen or experienced. I'll tell you something too. This is just an aside. I've got two particular conversations in my mind from John with me. When two of us were just talking, one time we were in the way back where the tables are, and one time we were in the front. And in each case, he shared something about God did in his life years ago. And I remember those still. You just don't know. Share. Don't hesitate to share your own story. You don't have to know everything. Daniel 10, this is number two. Suddenly a hand touched me and raised me to my hands and knees. Okay, so here's Daniel. I think Daniel the Great. We know that he's well thought of by heaven. I would love to have heaven say to me, Jim, you're well thought of. I've not heard that yet. Daniel is well thought of by heaven. And he's praying. He sees a vision and it really rattles him. And so while he's praying, and we start at the top here, verse 10, a hand touched me and raised me to my hands and knees. And he said to me, Daniel, you are a man treasured by God. How many of you want to be treasured by God? Wow, that's an attention getter. I'd be like, thank you. No, I don't know if I would say that. I think I'd be freaked out. Understand the words that I'm saying. Do you stand on your feet? For I now have been sent to you. After he said this to me, I stood trembling. Verse 12, don't be afraid, Daniel, he said to me. For from the first day that you purposed to understand and humble yourself before your God, your prayers were heard. I have come because of your prayers. Ugh. If you want an easy way to know how to make Talmudim, how to be involved in making disciples, you have got to pray for them. You pray for people. There are many things in the scriptures that they didn't have in scriptures because they didn't pray. James 4:2 says, you don't have because you didn't ask. In Daniel's case, we see a divine answer to his prayer. I don't know why God chose in that moment to be, you know, to send a representative to him, but God did choose in that moment to send him that representative to him because of his prayers. And our prayers need to be taken seriously. There's a great illustration. It's a little bit stretched out over a number of chapters and books, really. But this king Ahaz, a bad king of Israel, was upset with the Assyrians because the Assyrians were causing problems everywhere. And Ahaz had determined in his heart not to seek God for help. It says this in Chronicles. He wasn't going to seek God for help. Forget about it, forget about it, forget about it. Ultimately, Ahaz died and he was replaced with a guy named Hezekiah. And Hezekiah decided to seek God. And when he did seek God, God came and said, okay, here I am, let's go. And he brought a healthy solution in and told Hezekiah exactly what was going to happen. This king of the Assyrians is going to hear about this rumor of something at home. He's going to go at home and in his homeland, someone's going to kill him by a sword. Had there been no prayer, who knows what would have happened? Are you tracking with me? It is amazing to me how many people don't maintain a healthy prayer life. They don't pray for people that they're sharing faith with. They don't pray, they don't share faith, and they don't have the courage, and they don't ask for the courage, and they don't pray for people. It's just this loop of not communicating with God or with people. It's very bizarre. If you pray, I want you to try a challenge. I believe that God is going to meet this challenge. If you pray for somebody to share faith with, every day, pray it every day for 1 month. Jump on the opportunities because they will come. They will. Let me vent for 1 minute here. I'm going to go to my vent side. I'm venting over here. Bear with me. So I've been a believer now for a long time. And I can say this with a wide swath of experience. And people would say, you know, Jim, I just don't know who to share faith with. And Jim, I don't know where to start. And it's so big, you know. And I wish they were here. This is like spiritual YouTube today. But they would say, you know, Jim, I don't know what to do. And I got to the point, and this is probably about 20 years ago, I would ask them a question. I would say, so have you started to pray about it? Well, no. Do you ever pray about it? Well, not really. No, I mean to pray more, you know. Well, you got a bigger problem than sharing faith with somebody because you're not even praying about sharing faith with somebody. You got to start in a very basic place. Pray to share faith and then go share faith. They don't come years apart, by the way. They go hand in hand. Pray to share faith. Lord, show me. Here I go, Lord. Here I go. I'm going to share faith and then share faith. But I'm shocked in my lifetime over how many years where people would say, I don't know how to tell people about the Lord. Well, do you pray? No. Or do you see the problem here? Do I need to go into the details, right? No, we're good. It's amazing. Thank you for letting me vent there for a minute. Praying is necessary. I know a number of you long-term believers know that. I don't want to ask how many of you long-term believers don't pray. Dad, I don't think they're going to invite me back here. Number three, these three verses are all about love. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than himself. So this is esteem. This is a selfless approach, and we would know this as agape. Matthew 5, I tell you, love your enemies, agape your enemies, and pray for those who persecute you. Love, 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 this selfless love. John 13, I give you a new commandment, agape one another as I have loved you. This agape is just selfless, 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 selfless. I just am curious, you know, in modern day, maybe it's not like this anymore. When you were kids, did you ever get disciplined? Come on, like six people, let's go. I want to make sure you're with me. Yes, we get disciplined by our parents. My parents were good at it. Really good at it. Really, really good at it. Amazing. We get disciplined by our parents. Do they love us? So we live in a time where society defines this word love as tolerating everything. Our parents didn't tolerate everything, didn't they? Did they? When we look at agape, it's not about tolerating everything. Agape means it's a selfless love. We just keep giving and keep giving. Is it possible to give so much that you're a bad testimony for Yeshua? I don't think it is. If you do it in his name, I don't think it's possible to give so much it's bad for him. I mean a genuine giving. It's an interesting idea, this kind of selfless love. But it is the easiest way, sometimes it's hard to be selfless giver, but it's the easiest way to represent the Lord that I know. Just be selfless. Somebody's mad at you, be selfless back. Somebody you work with, a neighbor, they're, you know, those people, you know what I mean by that. Just be selfless back. They won't know what to do with it. Now, it's not tolerance. I think there's this buzz expression going around that, you know, love is tolerance and all that. Love is not tolerance. We know that as children. Our parents, any parents know that for their children. Anybody who's in a romantic relationship knows that love is not tolerance. There's different kinds of love in scriptures, but agape is selfless. It is selfless. We don't ask back. We can put framework and parameters to it. I don't want to be used. We've had people come in from time to time and say, I'm a widow, you have to give me money. That's not quite how it works. You know what I'm talking about, right? But if we want to be a Talmudim maker and we don't know how to start, just start with selfless giving. And finally, Acts 18, after these things, Paul left Athens and went to Corinth. And there he found a Jewish man named Aquila, a native of Pontus, having recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all Jewish people leave Rome. Paul went to see them, and because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them and began working, for by trade they were tent makers. And he was debating every Shabbat in the synagogue, trying to persuade both Jewish and Greek people. Use your job. Use your job as a platform to share. You know, here's this guy who wrote two-thirds of the New Covenant, that God used him very specifically to write two-thirds of the New Covenant and to really stand tall for Messiah. And we're still talking about him all these years later. But he had no problem working in his trade. Don't be ashamed of your trade. You know, sometimes I run into people like that, they'll be ashamed. They'll say, well, I just do this. You know, what does that have to do with anything? Use your trade to tell people and to show people. The trade's a great place to show selfless love. Trade's a great place to just open your mouth and say, hey, you should come, you know, to services with me. Trade's a great place to do any number of things. But don't hesitate to use it. Paul used it. Paul would make his thing. He'd go on the weekend. And he really became a community member. I think that people working in the trade, whatever profession, I think it's easier. They're seen as normal. Do you know when I go into a place now where someone's working, they say, oh, well, you do that for a living. You know, that's different. And I know my dad knows what I'm talking about. You get treated differently. I remember my dad saying this, and it's true. I remember after all these years, if he's on an airplane and people say, what do you do for a living? He didn't necessarily like to answer, because sometimes the conversations get kind of weird. And it's true. Several years ago, I was coming back from a trip, and I was sitting next to a man. We had a great conversation about pickleball. Of all things. I don't play pickleball, but I know what it is. And he was just talking. It was the best time. He's like, you know, we're looking for people. I'm the co-chair of my pickleball league in Waukesha, and you should come and join us. And it's just going to be so much fun. And we talked for a long time. And he said, so what do you do for a living? And I told him, well, I'm going to close my eyes for a little bit, Jim. Thanks for talking to me. Got in my very next leg of flights, and this guy's from Waukesha. This next leg was a businesswoman, and she worked. She said, what do you do? She asked me, she didn't go straight to what I did, but she spoke around it, and I said, I used to do that in a corporate setting, and I, you know, did X, Y, Z. So we had that in common. And she said, what do you do now? And I told her, no, the earplugs come out, you know. You know what I'm talking about? It's a hard thing for me, but it's not for you. For me, I know that it is. I'm not trying to make light of it. But use your trade as an opportunity. Use your neighbors. Use the coffee shop that you go to, the people that you know. Anybody ever see Cheers? An old 80s TV show. Norm would walk into Cheers. You know, they knew him there. If you're known someplace, tell them. They know you. They won't think you're crazy. The studies are coming out left and right that people, there's a genuine interest in America, especially with young people, to have questions about belief and faith and a walk with God. And they don't know where to start. So if you're praying for them, and if they already know you as, you know, relatively normal, have the conversation. So this whole point today, these four things are, again, I believe, very easy ways to start making Talmudim, making disciples. Very easy ways to do it. There's not a lot of heavy lifting, not a lot of newness there. Some of you have been doing these sorts of things for years, and you're saying, well, what next? I don't know, but maybe you should take a next step. Maybe there's something that you have set in the back of your mind that you've been thinking about doing. I don't know. I'll give you an example. Somebody recently was talking to me about helping a women's organization. And Jim, you know, we really should be helping more women's organizations. We should be helping with X, Y, Z. And I looked at him and I said, you know, it's not my thing, but maybe it's your thing. What do you think about helping a women's organization in the name of the Lord? What do you think about carrying the good news of Messiah to that organization? And they looked at me. Yeah, maybe I could do that. It had never even registered to them that they could do it. So we're going to talk in a week or so and see if there's a way to do that. Somebody else had approached me, just my wife and I, a couple days ago, and said, you know, I was thinking, Jim, about the challenge that we have in the building of getting outside groups to use the building, because we want to use this building for community functions and have people know about us and come in here and do different things. And she said, you know, maybe I can help with that. Maybe I can make calls and start to generate some noise for that. Sometimes it's about stepping into something new. Maybe you've been doing it this way for so long. Maybe you know these four things so well. Maybe it's time to try something new and shake the tree a little bit. Me, I'm shaking the tree. I've shared this. I'm trying to connect with, and we've had them here. You long-term Bethites know this. There's a group in Nepal that has done some. They work with pulling minors, out of sex trafficking. Somebody said, why Nepal? I'll tell you why Nepal. Because in the Hindu religion, with reincarnation, they won't help each other out of things because they have to prepare for the next life. So they don't have the same Judeo-Christian perspective that we do to pull people out and say, that's bad. So they don't help. And the second thing is, Nepal is the poorest Asian country on the earth. And there's a lot of very poor Asian countries. They can't fund. For the ones who want to do something, they can't hardly fund anything. There's no money to do anything there. So they do need some outside influences. I just kind of had a heart connection for them. I'm not saying I'm going to do a lot in Nepal, but I've been there a couple times, and I had the chance when I go there to speak specifically on the messianic views of the scriptures. I showed a picture of this a while ago. It really was a head trip for me. Lee and I were in the Himalayan mountain range, and we're looking across at this mountain. You maybe have heard of Everest. And so it's beautiful. We're almost 10,000 feet up in this thin air. And there's a big rock, you know, it's a mountain, right? You know, so there's a big rock that's kind of sticking out of this walkway. And there's a plaque on it with our logo. And it says Beth Messiah. And it's like, but that's stretching me. Find something that stretches you. Do it with a process. Go to your Havara leader, Keith and Peter. Go to my dad or me and say, hey, what do you think about me doing this? And we may say, have you done anything here at Beth Messiah? Because it's good to do something here also. But let's talk about maybe how you could get to that. Because God might be in it. We might be able to get behind you and support you. Do talk to us, though. Don't make an assumption about it. Do talk to us. We believe in accountability, good, healthy accountability, and looking out for each other. But there are things that we can do and we can grow in. And I find that a lot of people, when it comes to taking a big step, they know when to take a step because they're starting to get agitated by it. I mean, really agitated. Why doesn't anybody help with these people, Jim? Why don't they help with these people? It's something I hear a couple times a year. And I'll say, well, maybe it's supposed to be you. Because you know I've only got limited hours in the week, right? And they go, I say that a lot. And they go, well, that's true, but who's going to help them? Why don't you help them? And they go, maybe I will. Agitation is a great thing. Another clue for trying something new is just when you see the problem. Because if nobody else sees the problem, only you see the problem, maybe God's saying to you, well, look, I'm giving you this lens to see that there's an issue. Maybe you should be the one to get involved in that. I can't. I'm too busy. I'm too this, too that. Why don't you just float the idea up past the Havara leader or my dad and I, and we might have ideas for you. Or we may say, don't do it. There's some weird stuff out there. You know that, right? My point is, it's okay once you get the basics, and if you've been walking in the basics for a while, take a big step. Take a big step. Do something big. If you walk away with anything today, I hope that it's a prod. I hope you were prodded to try something new in those four things, or think about, pray into that big step. Amen? One thing that we all have in common here at Beth Messiah is we do believe that Yeshua is the Messiah. He is the Messiah. He said that he would come hundreds of years before he came. Hundreds of years before he came. And we get a certain sense of it. This is so old that the earliest prophecies of the coming Messiah go all the way back to Genesis 3. That's how old. And all of these prophecies stack up and they describe what we should expect from a Messiah. That he would come, that he would show, that he would tell us this wonderful story of God. And I say that in it is my words, but this way of saying that he really did represent the God. It's a powerful message of Messiah. We believe that here. We've given our life. Any Bethites, anybody who's been here for a while, has given their life to following the Messiah. It's a very easy thing. We recognize if this is the one, he described that he was going to look this way and be this way and do these things. He came on earth and he did these things. And then there's the resurrection itself, which we believe happened. There's lots of evidence for it. We believe very much in it. And we believe very much that he's coming back. It compels us to follow him. It's hard not to follow somebody that rises from the dead after they say they're going to go rise from the dead. It's very difficult not to follow somebody like that. And the most amazing thing is why he did it. He did it because he loves us. I don't even know why he did it before any of us were even born. But he did it because he loves us. So here at Beth Messiah, we follow him. That's our differentiator. It's so simple. So hard to do. He's with us, though. If you would like to do it today, if you would like to yourself, give your life to following the Messiah, all you have to do, see one of the guys with lanyards, or me, or my dad, that my dad is the one who did the liturgy, and say, I would like to follow Messiah. I would like to make a commitment to following him. You're not joining Beth Messiah. You're not doing that. We are going to pray with you, and we'll be excited for you, and that's where it stops. We're not going to put you on our mailer. We're not going to send you a bill. This is much bigger. He came for you. So if you'd like to do that today, he came for us. Then let today be your day. Amen? Please stand up. Let's pray. Lord God, we thank you. We hear you, God. We hear you that you want us to make Talmudim. Show us how to mature in this. Maybe it's the basics we need to take on. Maybe it's that next big step. But we recognize, Lord, this is something we need to do. And we want to obey. So help us with this, Lord, please. Take us up the way in this. Thank you for your very goodness, God. Thank you for your relationship with us. Thank you for your sacrifice and your resurrection. Teach us more of you. B'Shem Yeshua. Amen. Yovarecha Adonai Voyishmarecha. Ye'er Adonai Panav Eliecha Vihunecha. Yasei Adonai Panav Aliecha. V'yaseim Lacha Shalom. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord lift up his countenance on you and give you peace. So be blessed. Remember, there's prayers here, there's oneg, there's schmooze, there's coffee and some munchies down the hall. And actually, there's schmooze all over the building. Don't forget one calendar.